Blog Talk Radio.
Today, Jay and I have been off the air for about 3.5 weeks now, getting things ready. Jay is working on his project with You Make Me Feel Mighty Real, the old Sylvester song. We are working on our project for the Listen Give with our music, and you're going to hear a lot of great things from Jay and I coming together shortly. But without further ado, I'm going to bring on Mr. Jay Logan. Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gail. We're getting ready to get into our rainy season, the April season out here in San Francisco. And I know you guys are cold out there, but I guess it's our turn now. We had a great weekend, but now it's time for the rain. So.
Well, I don't know about you, but we had a real – I think we have adopted San Francisco's rainy season here. Or Jay, we had a really rough rainy day yesterday to the point that it was flooding. So I think we have San Francisco's weather. Yeah, it was up to our ankles yesterday. So it was pretty rough.
Wow.
With a very strong wind rain. And, you know, with me, with my arm hurting now, getting soaked when you have an arm injury is not the greatest. But, you know, Jay,
right.
Without further ado, you know, we have a great guest today. Her name is Becky Winchell. And I'm really excited to have her. She works with Reagan.com, which is Lawrence Reagan Communications, and PRDaily.com. And, you know, Jay, I'm really excited because she's going to share her journey with us. She gets to be all over the world and travel to so many amazing countries, and, you know, while she does what she does for a living. So we're going to find out about her journey so that if any adults or youth want to create their own professional career the way, you know, she has, they can get some pointers from her. You ready to bring her on, Jay?
Yes, let's bring her on. It'd be great.
Yes, and then we'll go into the latest news with Jay Logan. Okay. Hey, Becky, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing really well. Becky, this is Jay out in San Francisco, and I'm out in New York, and we're really glad to have you. I think you're in Dublin in the world these days.
I am. I'm currently in South Dublin.
Well, thank you for being with us. And I hope you're ready for a lot of fun, too.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. So, Becky, we're going to ask that you answer the questions, right? But you don't give out all the goodies. You just answer the questions.
Okay.
You know, we don't want you to give out too much information. Then you'll give away all the goodies later. Is that okay with you?
Okay, sounds good. I'll try not to give too much.
Okay, great. So we're going to go right into everything with you. Becky, I have a question for you. I wanted to know, actually it's two in one. You know, we're not going to tell the audience what you do, but we would love to know is, did you ever think as a young girl that you would be doing the work that you're doing now?
No, I think as a young girl, my dream was actually to be on Broadway. So I guess in a way, it did involve some traveling because I thought I'd be traveling around and performing. I really enjoyed acting. I really enjoyed the theater. Stage performances were my kind of thing. And I really liked being up in front of people and talking and sort of interacting with people in that sort of way. So, no, I didn't think that I would end up where I am now, but looking back, it does make sense. I think a lot of people discount their passions when they decide on a line of work, or they say something like, well, this is what I wanted to do when I was younger, but that was a little silly. And I think there's a way to work your passions into a feasible career. It probably and might not be the way that it appeared to you or, you know, that you dreamed about when you were younger, but it usually makes those hobbies and those passions work in a job sense later on.
Well, you know, my next question to you, and then Jay has a question for you too, is did you create your job yourself?
No, it's sort of happened. The main job that I have right now with Lawrence Reagan Communications and with specifically with PR Daily. So I work with PR Daily. I'm don't work so much with Reagan. And that is me being over here and me traveling just sort of happened after I was with them for a little while. I had an opportunity and, you know, luckily I work with some really great people who trust me, and I was able to do that and to work remotely. The office itself is based in Chicago, so they really like it when I come back and visit. It's great seeing all of them. But, yeah, I was allowed to do that, and then I just kind of took off. As far as my other stuff, I've always leaned towards smaller PR firms or freelancing and consulting. I think that just kind of speaks to more of my entrepreneurial nature. I am a person that generally is self-motivated and works a little bit better by herself. Not that I don't like working with people, but I definitely do better work when I'm not distracted in an office. I find most people come up to me and want to talk to me, and vice versa. So being able to travel and being able to work remotely allows me to get the work done and focus like I need to when I need to, but also I have times when I can come back and have that interaction.
Wow.
Wow. Well, yeah, we're going to get to the nitty gritty here with Becky. Becky, I'm wondering, how did you start out?
Just in my career in general.
Yes.
So I started while I was in school. I was encouraged to do a lot of internships. And I got started on interning pretty early on, before I actually had to. So we had in my major, which was public relations or communications with a public relations emphasis, we did have some requirements that we had to intern and do a certain amount of work with real-life clients. And I was able to do that both through the program and then through my internships. But I started doing internships a little bit before the requirement came, and a lot of that was because I wanted to get the extra experience. So my first internship was actually with American Family Insurance, which is headquartered out of Madison, which is where I'm from, Madison, Wisconsin. So I went there one summer and was able to work with them, and actually was able to secure a contractor position for the following semester. So they let me work remotely in another office, not the corporate office, of course, because I went to school in Utah, but another of the one of their agents' offices, and I communicated with the team back in Madison. And then I did a plethora of other internships and jobs for different companies. And the great thing that I learned about that was, and that a lot of my classmates ended up asking me about, and now just people looking at and going into PR and marketing or any sort of a communications field, is I learned that it's really helpful to do a lot of those internships or jobs. And some of them were paid okay, and some of them were more for the experience, but it allowed me to see what I liked and what I didn't like instead of having an idea. Some people feel very confident, for example, if they want to work in an agency doing work with a certain kind of clientele. Other people feel that they really like a certain industry, so let's just say the food industry or you know, the technology industry, and they really want to work for a certain company. But interning allows you to see those things in action and to really size up what you like and what you don't like, so that you can better go back to your courses and learn the things that you need to when you realize that this is actually what you want to do, that this is the path that you want to go down. So it helps you to kind of hone things a little bit better before graduation.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jay, because this is along the lines of what Jay and I do with youth. One of the things I want to ask you is, it may sound the same, but it is different, Becky. Did you create a job to travel? Like, share with, you know, we heard you go into it a little bit, but how did you create this job where you were able to travel? Like, you already had the job, but how did you, you know, how did they entrust you, and how did you, you know, create this so other young people or older people can hear this and see if their passion to travel, how can they integrate it with the people they're currently working with or even create a new job?
Right. I think the big thing is just to be able to show that you can be trusted. That's a huge thing, and to show that you don't need motivation to do the task. A lot of things that I've encountered, or I guess I should say behaviors that I've encountered both in school and then in the workforce, is that a lot of, I really can only speak to the communication sense, but I know that it's across industries as well, is that, you know, your general employee or your general student really needs to kind of be told what to do. And so you get, for example, you go into a course and you're in college, you're all adults, and you have the syllabus there, but it's a very common thing to have, you know, your classmates all around you, or perhaps, you know, you're the one doing it, that is asking, you know, specifically, okay, what do I need to do in order to get this done? And almost, I had some people would ask, basically, okay, what is the minimum amount that I have to do in order to get this done? And I see that sort of trend happening in the workplace as well, where I noticed right away that, you know, especially in both bigger and smaller organizations, you'd set up a meeting and people would be surprised when I would show up with stuff already done. Because in my mind, why would you have a meeting to discuss future meetings? And so it helps, and I think you get a lot more not only leeway, but potential bargaining power if you are motivated and kind of, not to be cliche, but go above and beyond. You know, you come in and you look at projects that you can work on that you might not already have on your responsibility list. You know, if you find something really interesting, or you think of a good idea, to constantly bring those kind of, to do things ahead of time, to show that you don't need reminding about certain things. All of those type of behaviors build trust to the level that, you know, people aren't going to worry that you're going to get your stuff done if you're not there in front of them. And I think that's the biggest thing that people can do. Some jobs require you to physically be there, and I know that in certain companies and certain agencies, they're less willing to have remote employees, whereas something like in the tech field with a lot of developer jobs, I know, and IT jobs, it's a little bit more flexible. But I know that the trust is huge. They don't just, you know, randomly give that out to anybody who applies. Most jobs don't anyway.
That's wonderful. I wanted to know, what countries have you traveled to?
So I've been, in the past year, I've really been focusing on Europe. I've just really wanted to visit Europe and spend time here. So that's really where I will be focused over the next probably a year or two more than I am now. Hmm. And this started last August. So, really about a couple of years, two or three years that I'll be here at least. And I've been to Ireland, throughout the UK, Austria, Hungary, Sweden, a lot of the Nordic countries, so Sweden, Norway, Denmark. I haven't been to Finland yet, France. I'm actually going in a few weeks. I'm going to celebrate my birthday late. And we're going to the Netherlands and then to Iceland, hopefully to see the Northern Lights.
Wow, yes.
Well, one of the things that Jay and I really love is cultures. And I'd love to know, what have you learned from all of your, from visiting so many countries, what have you learned from different cultures?
It's been really interesting because I think you can pick up on both the differences and the similarities pretty quickly if you're willing to look for them. But the other thing that I've learned I was surprised at is more geared towards the similarities and the way that people connect with one another. So, for example, I know here in Ireland, it feels closer to my life back in Wisconsin, where I'm from, and it has more of that, definitely not a Midwestern feel, but very open, very friendly. Most Irish people will just start up a conversation with you. They don't think really twice about doing that. And they don't really have to know you to do that. So you can talk with the person that's standing next to you buying your groceries or, in a pub. They're pretty approachable. And they do like their beer and their alcohol, which is a little similar to Wisconsin. In comparison, you go somewhere like Sweden, the people are pretty reserved. They tend not to make eye contact. If you're walking down the street, it tends to almost have that New York feel where you don't look at people. And they tend to be very, very reserved emotionally. So almost passive aggressive in some instances if they get upset. They really don't like being confrontational. There's such a range with people depending on where you're at. But the common theme that I found is just that people are interested in connecting. And I thought that was really interesting because even in a culture like Scandinavia, where people are generally more reserved, they would hear me speaking English and I'll be really interested. And I think part of that is because to them, I'm different where, I'm in a situation where everybody looks different to me. And in Sweden, everybody for the most part speaks English as well as Swedish, which is lucky for me because I do a really horrible job at speaking Swedish for now. I think they just looked at it like it was a neat cultural experience for them to learn new things. The same thing sort of happened when I was in France. And it happens, I think, a little bit more because a lot of times I travel alone or I will travel just with one person. So I think it's easier to see when you're not part of a big tour, like on a tour bus. Is that when I was in France, and again, I don't know French very well, and so I'm using Google Maps and I'm trying to find these landmarks and I'm walking places and I got approached so many times to ask for directions and to ask for things, which I thought was hilarious because I don't even speak the language, much less do I know where things are. But on one particular instance, I was able to actually show a person who wasn't from France, and we were trying to find a common, any common language and any common communication, so that I could show him what I had found out about the Arc de Triomphe, because we were standing in front of it, and it's this weird thing where, you know, you want to get there, but there's a almost like a huge roundabout around the Arc. And the traffic, you can't cross the street because it's a hugely populated area and the traffic goes by very fast. So you have to use a certain tunnel to get under. And so I was explaining to him that I had found it because he was trying to figure out how to get over there. And it's just that sort of, I think, underlying theme of people wanting to connect with other people. And so everybody has their own way of doing it. And it's nice when you go into a different culture and you want to learn about the culture rather than just saying, okay, well, and unfortunately as Americans, we stereotypically have that sort of, that stereotype about us, that we just like to go in and do things the way that we want to. But when you go into other cultures and you're willing to learn and you want to connect with those people, I found that they're very willing to connect with you back on a variety of different levels. So I guess that's really the overarching thing that I've been seeing in my travels.
Wow.
So Becky, you're in Europe now. You been to Asia or any other country?
No, I'm hoping to go to Australia and Asia within the next few years. So we'll see if I can do that. I've been to Canada and Mexico before I came out to Europe. I actually served a mission for my church in Canada, so I lived there for a year and a half. And then I've just, you know, been down to Mexico and the Caribbean area a few times, but no, I haven't been able to go to the other areas yet.
Well, Becky, with all that you've done, what's important to you that you'd like to accomplish?
Oh man, I think we need another show for that. I mean, there's lots of things, and I think they change they change almost daily, or maybe not change, but the list kind of ebbs and flows. I wrote a book. I co-authored a book with a professor that I had a PR professor, and we would like to write another one. And so that's definitely on my list of things to do. I do like speaking at conferences, and so I'm looking at that for 2016. It's already the middle of February, which I don't know how time got away from me. That seems to be a common theme. But I'll be looking at things like that. I definitely want to, even though I didn't start with the goal in mind of traveling, for example, to blog about it or to do anything like that, I found that there are a lot of travel blogs, but it's actually kind of hard to find certain things. So I'm looking at, and I have a goal of starting to blog about certain things and incorporating that so other travelers hopefully can easily find things. You know, great apps to use, for example, when you come to Ireland, that can make your life so much easier, that I wouldn't have been able to find had I not, you know, gone out to a pub and overheard people talking and realized what they had. So definitely there's a lot of things I want to accomplish. So hopefully 2016 will be a good year full of things.
That's wonderful. So Becky, what we do, me and Gail, we want to shrink you down a little bit. So we want you to describe your work in detail to us on a daily basis.
Well, most of my work on a daily basis is working with Reagan. And so I am the co-editor for PR Daily, and that it's the largest publication of PR news and content online. And we basically, my co-editor and I work. I usually write an article every day, and then I spend the rest of my day as it's a more journalist. Role, like a journalistic role, even though I work on PR and I get involved with PR professionals on a daily basis. I get a lot of pitches. I edit and publish articles on our site. I work with our event and marketing teams. We do a lot of conferences, a lot of conferences, webinars, Reagan events. We have PR Daily University, which is a really great training hub. So I work with them. Sometimes they'll have an article that we need to publish or, you know, something coming up. I also run our Twitter chat every Tuesday. It's at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's Reagan Chat. So there's been a really great group of PR journalists, marketing, and other communication professionals that come into Reagan Chat, and we talk about a lot of things that range from internal communications to social media campaigns to crisis communications. So that usually takes up most of my day as far as work goes, and then I do consult on social media and public relations. So I do have projects for clients that I work on outside of work, and I've been trying to get my personal site up and running so I can start blogging. I am active on social media, so I do a lot of that. You know, there's sometimes I'll sit for an hour or so and you know, update my Flipboard magazines or you know, try to find a project that I'm working on through, you know, Pinterest or Twitter. So the days kind of change a little bit, but with Greg in there, that's pretty much what I do.
Well, I know that Jay has one more question for you sneaking in there.
Yeah, I want to know what is missing in online space.
Do you mean in a professional sense or period?
Yeah, and just in general, what's missing, you know, like what's missing, like from a PR standpoint or, you know, social media standpoint, what's missing in the online space?
Sure. I think it's not really what's missing necessarily because it's out there. People are ignoring it, unfortunately, much more than, I mean, they shouldn't ignore it at all. And that is the importance of relationships and how everything really revolves around those relationships. And I say that in the sense of, so I really look at this a lot because I'm passionate about social media, that's my specialty, but I am a public relations professional and I work with a lot of public relations professionals. So I look at that and public relations is all about it's a management function of building relationships with all sorts of people, you know, customers, vendors, suppliers, employees, everybody. And it really just depends on, you know, what your certain goal is and your certain job title of who you're building the relationship with. But that's really what it comes down to. And there's been this weird disconnect that when public relations professionals, on a very general basis, they look at social media and suddenly I think they just don't connect the dots that you're still doing the same thing. It's just virtually. So you still want to reach out to people and build relationships that are mutually beneficial. And that includes creating content that is valuable to them and not just a cry of look at me, I'm trying to do important things, subscribe to this, click on this, do this. But it's creating something that they want to share and want to subscribe to and want to look at and be a part of and throw their stories into the mix. And I think that's one of the reasons that marketers on a general basis have taken over social media. And I don't say that in a bad way, but, you know, a lot of PR professionals have been kind of gun-shy about going online. It's, you know, I mean, we're several years in and it's not going anywhere. It's changing, but it's social media is here to stay as we move towards our mobile devices and we move to increasingly, you know, virtual lives and connections with people. That is just really, really important. And I think that a lot of times it's maybe not missing, but forgotten. So every single time I connect with somebody on Twitter and I'm meeting an automatic direct message, or, you know, I connect with somebody on LinkedIn and they don't personalize the request and they don't know them and they immediately throw a form letter at me with their pitch, I think, yep, you've forgotten about relationships. Uh-huh. And the importance of them. So, and I think it's just, you can go a lot further, you can do a lot more when you remember that there's a person on the other side of the computer or the smartphone or whatever it is that you're doing, and let that guide you.
You know, we have three more questions for you.
Okay.
Becky, but it's something that you said that's really important, relationships, okay? Jay, I'm just going to sneak a question in here. You know, you said something about that relationship and then they just pitch you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That can be one of the biggest turnoffs. You know, one of the things, Becky, you know, you and I are always on Twitter. Jay's on, you know, Facebook or Twitter. My question to you is how, you know, for the audience to hear this, especially young people who are getting onto Twitter now, okay, how does someone, they want to reach someone on Twitter, they haven't been able to reach someone another way, they want to create a relationship with them, but at the same time, they do want to make a request. How would you suggest to them to do that?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways that you can reach out, and the advantage, I think, people that are students or, you know, interns or people that are younger to whatever field that they're going into have a unique opportunity because they have that sort of, I'm learning, can I learn from you sort of thing. And I say that in a sense of, I think everybody must be careful because there's unfortunately a tendency by a lot of people to, you know, to ask others, hey, you know, can I take you out to lunch and pick your brain and, you know, and do stuff like that. And you have to be really careful because, you know, most people that have these really wonderful ideas and are doing things, you know, I mean, they're working. Usually the life of an entrepreneur is not an 8-hour day. It's a, you know, 13 to 15-hour day. And their time is really valuable and it's worth more than, you know, a sandwich. And so you have to be careful into not abusing that sort of thing. But at the same time, I think that students and younger people to industries have a position to follow somebody or to connect with them on LinkedIn and send a short personalized message, you know, just saying, hey, you know, you came to my class and lectured today and I thought it was really interesting. I'd love to, you know, follow you and talk to you more, or create Twitter lists of people that you really admire, start an RSS feed. I really like using Feedly, for example, and start following people. Right now on LinkedIn, their pulse is very big, so having that sort of the publishing network that LinkedIn has is pretty big. So they have a network of what they call influencers that will write content and they have very large audiences. But on top of that, there's tons of other people that are in PR and marketing and communications, as well as a plethora of other industries that are writing LinkedIn posts that you can follow them without even connecting. And I think going ahead and sharing something that we say from a journalistic standpoint is PR pros should really build those relationships long before they have to pitch. And so that includes following somebody on Twitter, looking at what they have to say, responding, self-fulfilling, right? So if you read a journalist's article and you really like it, then share it on Twitter and tag them, you know, and say, this was a really great piece and you should read it. And that sort of thing, I think, helps enforce, it helps kind of keep you in the front of their minds where they'll remember you a little bit better when you do send them an email or send them a private message. But then it also kind of enforces that relationship again. Social media is great for that because journalists are actually the largest verified group on Twitter. But they use Twitter a lot. Well, that's great.
And that does sound great for young people. You know, there are older people that are listening to you now, too. And when I say older,
yeah,
I don't mean like 70, but like people who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, who are out of school. What would you suggest to people who aren't, you know, the young person? Because young people, it is a little easier. What about people who are like at your stage of the game or a little older? What would you suggest to them?
I think it's a similar approach, only, you know, you don't have that nice opportunity of, hi, I'm a student. So people are in general a little bit more willing to spend some time with you. But you go ahead and connect with people. I mean, social media is meant to be open. If you don't know something and you don't know the etiquette of it, I think it's a good thing to learn. And there are enough articles and enough webinars and enough white papers out there that you can get for free that, a quick Google search will give you pretty much whatever you need. You just need to have the dedication and the time to look for it. But learning kind of just the basic principles of etiquette to know, for example, that most people, and everybody's a little bit different, but generally speaking, Twitter is really open, where Facebook, you don't go adding everybody just because. But looking at a person's Facebook, I do know some people, and I run my Facebook kind of similarly, where I do try to post industry stuff, and people can go ahead and follow me without being connected to me as a friend, and they can, if they like that platform better, for example, than LinkedIn or Twitter. But knowing sort of etiquette where, you know, you generally don't send a friend request to somebody that you have never met unless you have a good rapport with them already on another social channel. But with Twitter, you know, you can follow everybody or you can create curated lists and start interacting. Twitter chats are really good. Share your opinions as well as learning from other people. You can ask them questions in real time. You can get noticed for your thoughts.
Got it. That's great. Well, I know I have one more question, and then I know Jay comes on after that. And it's with so much content out there, how does one get their brand out there? You know, there's a lot of content out there. You know what I mean? Becky, how does one put their brand out there with so much so much out there in the internet sphere, as we would say?
It's really, it comes back again to relationships and knowing your audience. You want to create content that they actually want, that they, something that I talk about in the book that I co-authored is how you should really look at the content you create almost as a digital amenity. So you think in kind of a more traditional sense, money aside, money and urgency aside, you usually go to a certain, you know, movie theater or grocery store or gas station or mechanic because you trust them. And also all these little things that enhance your experience, right? They have really good coffee, or they have, you know, they give you coupons and a loyalty card, or they have a nice play area mm-hmm. for your kids, et cetera, et cetera. And that's kind of online content too. I think people should ask themselves why customers would want to follow them on social media. You know, if for example, I work for a company and we're just barfing out, you know, hey, this is what's on sale today, why would anyone want to follow us? But if we're showing them and we're creating, you know, really cool infographics of, hey, this is how you can use this product, you know, to go to this cool life hack thing or to get healthy or whatever it is that they're interested in, then we're providing some value. And that's a way to stick out. The other thing, too, is highlighting relationships. And so people generally are going to already be talking about you, and they're generally going to be doing it already online. And so if you can find those people and work with them and feature them, you don't have to create new stuff all the time. You don't have to create these articles. You just have to feature what's already out there.
Interesting. Wow. Boy, it's been, you know, Becky, you're nailing it. You're nailing it. So me and Gail, we always like to give a spot question. So it's going to be hard. We know that you're on a Norwegian tour. We want to know, and you have to try to answer it. It might be hard. What is your favorite country?
Oh, I don't. I honestly don't know if I could give a favorite country. I will say this. I was very surprised by how much I loved Budapest and Hungary. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. But it's a wonderful city. It made me completely fall in love with Christmas markets, which is like the greatest thing since sliced bread in Europe. In the late fall into winter around the Christmas season. And Budapest is a beautiful, beautiful city. Very beautiful. So I will, that's my way of answering that without answering that. going there.
Well, you've really nailed it for us today in so many areas, Becky. Thank you. And our very last question is, what would you tell your younger self now that you've learned so much?
I think the big thing is just not to be afraid of experiences and to go for things. I mean, there's been a lot of times in my life, and I've seen it in other people's too, where, you know, they want to do something, but they just, you know, it's crazy to think. And there's some people that talk to me and go, okay, wait, so you work remotely and you just one day decided to like go to Europe for several months? Yeah. I was just sick of thinking about it, and I decided that I'm just going to go ahead and try and do it. I researched what I needed to do and figured out what I needed to do to make it work, and made it work. And I think that applies to a lot of things, whether that's getting the job that you want, you know, traveling when you want, maybe, you know, doing that big thing, whether it's publishing your blog or writing a book. It's just not to be afraid. We often think that we have these kind of self-doubts that creep in, and I'm definitely one of them. Oh, maybe I don't know enough, and I'm not the authority to talk about X, Y, and Z, but it's just not true, and I think they're just uselessly holding us back. So when you just go after what it is that you want, I think amazing things can happen.
Well, you know, Jay, if I could sneak one question in here, and if you have the last one, that would be great, too. You know, Becky, a lot of people, you're from the U.S., and you researched to go over to these other countries, and you got up and did it, and that's great. But how were you able to set yourself up for a place to live, and how the money that you make apply to the difference in currency over there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's one of the things is that I'm not, like, I still technically live in Wisconsin, so I haven't moved over to Europe, and part of that is because I just am going on a visitor visa. So, for example, I'm coming back to the States in the summer for a few months, and then I'll come back out to Sweden to stay. I hope to have a visa that will allow me to stay for a year later, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I think the thing that I've learned is that it's really important to look at things before you go. So there's different, for example, I know very well that the requirements that Ireland has versus the UK, which are a little bit different, versus what they call the Schengen area, which is almost all of Europe except for Ireland and the UK and a few other countries. But Schengen area, for example, U.S. Visitors can only stay for a period of 90 days cumulatively within each 180-day period. So it's definitely something you have to watch for, and you plan out your trips carefully. Because, of course, you know, the last thing you want to do is overstay your welcome and then have them get upset with you and not let you back. And that's something that I look at. As far as the currency, it's just a lot of times, especially it helps that I don't live here, so I'm just visiting. I'm just staying for longer than, you know, a 2-week vacation. So a lot of times I have found long-term Airbnbs, for example, or even for short-term, that's a lot cheaper than a hotel and nicer, in my opinion. Or I find things, I make connections and find people who are willing to, you know, rent out a room. Because I personally feel I am too old for the hostel experience, especially because I work from home, so I don't want to be around, you know, I need to have a spot to work in quiet. But there's a lot of things that you can do to kind of to offset that, and it's great because right now the dollar is pretty strong. I feel a hit when I'm in the United Kingdom, especially in expensive places like London. It's very similar to the States. You know, you can go in somewhere like St. Louis and do things a lot differently than you would in Manhattan. So you just plan things out and you learn how to do things, I think, a little bit more cheaply and learn what it is that you need and what it is that you don't. I have been traveling around too with a suitcase and a carry-on and a purse, and it's been very liberating not having a lot of stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, do you have any last questions for Becky before we go?
Yeah, I have one last question, Gail. A lot of people often confuse public relations with marketing. Would you mind setting them apart for us so that our listeners will know the difference? Because, you know, some people don't know what to hire. So I just wanted our listeners to know the difference between public relations and marketing.
Sure. So I speak more towards the public relations sense because I definitely work in that space more than I do marketing. But there's a lot of crossover, and I think that's why it's confusing. Public relations is the management function of building and maintaining relationships that an organization or a person, like if you're a personal brand, such as a celebrity, that you need to have in order to be successful. So let's just say a clothing brand, for example. You're a startup company. You need to be able to have successful and beneficial relationships for both parties, with vendors, retailers that will be housing your products, with customers, with people that are really loyal. We call them brand ambassadors, you know, or brand advocates. A lot of marketers use that for influencer marketing, they call that. You look at all of that and you build these relationships and maintain them so that both sides are happy. Public relations looks at things that are on the horizon. So let's just say a cotton shortage is coming. And you know that's going to affect, or, all of a sudden you can see on the horizon that it's coming to light that a lot of clothing retailers are, investigative reports have uncovered unsavory business practices, you know, that they mm-hmm. have been using underpaid labor out of the country. And that's something that, as a PR professional, you look for so you can respond communications, you can respond before it gets to be a huge debacle, like something like VW. that was something where, I pity anybody who's in PR pities a crisis team that has to respond then to that when mm-hmm. it's already so bad that you have to just, you know, you're just stopping the damage as much as you can. Where marketing tends to deal a lot more with, at least a lot more directly with sales, with promotions. Content marketing is one of the areas where they overlap, and social media marketing is as well. But I think the big thing is marketing really focuses on, I know there's a huge thing, we call it the Harvard principles. So a lot of it has to do a lot more with direct sales, with getting, you know, readers to convert to customers, to that sort of thing, where public relations generally looks at building the brand awareness, maintaining the reputation, building the relationships, doing that sort of stuff. There is a lot of crossover, though, and there is a very high need for marketers and PR professionals to work together.
Well, wow. It's funny that you would mention this because this is a very interesting thing. I talk about this often. So a lot of people don't realize there's a difference between a publicist, a public relations uh-huh. person. Marketing can actually encompass both the public relations, the publicist, promotions, publicity, and all that. If you hire a marketing company, as well as the social media aspect too.
Yeah, it really depends on. I've known of firms that really only specialize in what we call media relations. That's what you're talking about with being a publicist. We call it media relations, and that's an important part of PR, and it's unfortunately what some people think is all PR is.
Exactly.
Is just getting
exactly.
placements. Yeah, but PR is much, much more than just media relations. It is an important
exactly.
part, but it's much more than that, definitely.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that marketing encompasses all of that. You can hire a marketing firm to do all of that. The publicity, the public relations, and the promotions. It depends on the kind of firm you're hiring and what they're
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. Usually it's not a marketing firm that will do that sort of stuff. Usually that's more of a PR agency that will do that, where marketing really – so marketing generally doesn't do things like media relations unless it's a firm that is a the – digital communication firms tend to do both. So there are cropping up a lot of firms that will do public relations and marketing. And so they'll work, for example, with your sales department, and they'll come up with, you know, this sort of content for your content marketing and your influencer marketing and social media campaigns, as well as then you have public relations people come and be, and they're on your team as you as the client, and they'll come on and they'll do, you know, they'll help the marketing as far as building the relationships with people and helping have increased success on social media and through those content marketing. Some of them will have a newsroom solution where they're gathering all this content and all these media relations hits. They're doing all sorts of stuff like that. They're training. A lot of times PR professionals will train executives, or you think, for example, of anybody, athletes are a huge one in the Super Bowl. Whether or not they listen is a different thing entirely, but those are all PR professionals that train them how to respond at press conferences and things like that. Those are all, that's a PR responsibility, is to
exactly
get people ready.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah, so, well, we really thank you for your time, and it was great having you on. Mm-hmm. We hope you will come back and be with us at another time in the year and share with us what your latest adventures are. It's been really great. So thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Becky.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. So it's quite interesting, Jay, having Becky on today.
Oh, yeah, I've learned a lot, and wow, you know, you never think that PR is so broad, you know, so wow, you know, I know our listeners learned a lot. This is a great, great show to listen to, because a lot of people have these questions, so it's wonderful.
They do have
it's a wonderful show.
I agree, and I think your question was really good, because Becky is in the new, okay, this one, we don't want to sound old here, because we're not old, because we're into the latest stuff, but Becky's kind of like the new generation, you know, public relations, mm-hmm. promotions, publicity, you know, and there's a lot of people who still put that all under marketing. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer the five P's of marketing. You know what I mean? We no longer do it that way, because marketing is not even really down to demographics the way it used to be. It's based on lifestyle. So it's just quite interesting. And now we're going into no gender marketing and PR, you know, where a lot of people now do not want to be recognized by gender. So that's another area.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be quite interesting, too, because people do not want to be recognized by gender. So it's going to be interesting. The new wave of everything with PR and public relations and publicity and promotions and all that, it's going to be interesting, because now it's going to be specialists in each of those areas. Rather than marketing, when we used to send our youth to school, they learned that the five P's of marketing encompass this. So now we have no targeted demographics. I don't even think we have genders anymore. I don't know what we have.
You know, what's interesting, too, I was looking at an enterprise commercial, and the guy said, I don't want to talk to humans. So that's a whole other thing, too. I don't want to deal with humans. So how do you market to these people? They don't want to talk to anybody. They just want to pick their car up, and I don't want to deal with anyone, and I don't want to get marketed to, and... Yeah, so we got a whole mess going on.
There's even more of a
thing.
it is also another plethora that's happening too, Jay. And there's a new thing that's coming about, Jay, is that in 5 years, they are at the Social Media Week in New York, they are actually having where artificial intelligence will be 100% at the capacity of a human being's brain in less than 5 years. So they're saying that public relations, promotions, publicity, all of that, you won't even have a human being doing it. You won't even have the computer doing it, because a computer still needs a human being to do it. It is going to be completely our computers in another year. Going on sale will be computers with artificial intelligence. So it won't be that you'll receive a phone call and you can just say, answer my phone, or something like that. You know what I mean? It will actually be, you, it, 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 it's it's going to be quite interesting, is all I can say.
I don't know what to say. I can't wait or wow. You know, it's like, oh, it's so scary.
It is. It is. It really is. So we can only see. But artificial intelligence is here. It's not going anywhere.
Wow. Well, I just wanted to say, put a shout out. We lost a Vanity, this weekend. She's out here in Fremont, and it's very interesting because Prince, he was in at one of his concerts. I think it's in Australia or somewhere, where he did a whole show, and he stopped the show, and he did some personal things, and he was telling a little story, Gail. I don't know if you know. He was saying that him and Vanity, they got in an argument. So Prince said, "Hey, Vanity, I'm so mad at you. I'm going to throw you into the pool." So Vanity said, "Well, you're a little scrawny guy. You can't throw me in the pool. You're too little." So Prince got so mad, he got his bodyguard, Gail, and he had his bodyguard throw Vanity into the swimming pool. So I just thought that was something good to find.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, we've lost some major people. David Bowie, the gentleman from Earth, Wind, and Fire, now Vanity. You know, and Vanity had turned her life around. You know, so there's a lot that, you know, we don't realize how lucky we are.
Yes.
We don't realize. So I think it's time for us to kind of wake up and smell the coffee, folks. And let's get it together and, you know, really, you know, so to speak, like this young lady said, let's go out here and make life happen.
Right.
Let's go out here and definitely make life happen. Because it's time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really is time. Well, with that said, we thank you, everyone, for our show. And we look forward to having you next week. And Becky Winchell, thank you so much. You gave us a lot of great information. Have a wonderful day.